From historic Seminary Ridge in Gettysburg, Pennsylvania, this is The Seminary Explores. Conversations about people, politics, theology, and life with your host, Dr. Gerald Christensen.
What will we be able to do in such countries as Nicaragua when it comes to service of Americans, American churches, and others when we are facing the 21st century and all of its challenges? Hello, I'm Jerry Christensen, and this is The Seminary Explores with our guest, Greg Bowles, who is the in-country project director for PGL, Project Gettysburg León, living for some years now in León, Nicaragua. Describe for us, if you can, Greg, since we Americans are so often so little familiar with Central American countries, what is Nicaragua? What are its major challenges? Who are the Nicaraguans? What do they see of themselves?
Mm-hmm. Well, one of the first things you would say about Nicaragua that most people note is it still, and has for a number of decades now, been the second poorest country in the Western Hemisphere. Haiti, unfortunately, is number one in that sweepstakes. But Nicaragua remains a very poor country, despite, you know, years of development work, years of U.S. involvement in the country. The other thing that is most noticeable about Nicaragua is its involvement with the U.S., not just more recently, but over the course of the last 150 years or so. We occupied Nicaragua during the 1920s and 1930s. The U.S. Marines occupied the country. They did leave, but what they left in place was a dictatorship known as the Somoza dictatorship, and that was later overthrown in 1979 by the Sandinista Revolution, which in modern terms is what Nicaragua is most known for, a revolution that actually triumphed, that threw out a dictatorship supported by the United States, and for 10 years, essentially, had a revolutionary government in place.
Which was not in great favor with the United States.
Which was not in great favor with the United States. As many may remember, the history there is that the U.S. essentially sponsored what became known as the Contras. They really aren't called the Contras in Nicaragua. They now refer to them as La Resistencia, the resistance. They don't prefer the term Contra, but the Contra War was very noticed here in the United States, partially because we, by and large, funded the Contra War. And it was essentially a civil war within the country of Nicaragua to throw out the Sandinista government, considered at that time during the Cold War era a semi-communist government. Mm-hmm. Whether that was accurate or not is still open to a lot of historical debate, but the point of fact was that the U.S. essentially sponsored 10 years of civil war within the country of Nicaragua, at least from Nicaraguan standpoints. So that's how they often see it. Mm-hmm. Things have changed a lot since then. The Contra War, or the civil war, however you may want to refer to it, technically ended in 1989 with peace accords, but it really ended in 1990 when the Sandinista government was voted out of office, and as many people did not expect, they actually left office after losing the election. a revolutionary government that had come mm-hmm. into power. There was an election in 1984 too, but there was something of a
rubber stamp
mm-hmm. election. The 1990 election was seen as legitimate by all sides, especially by, I guess you would say, the right wing side once the Sandinistas lost it. But there was a lot of question as to whether they would stand down after coming to power through force of arms. However, they did. They left. What followed in the 1990s was a series of neoliberal governments that brought some good things. There was a lot of infrastructure development within the country of Nicaragua. It brought some bad things, too. Some of the disparity between the rich and the poor, which the revolution, part of its point had been to lessen that disparity, that increased quite a bit during the governments that came after the original Sandinista government in 1990, the government that was voted out. But in 2006, the Sandinistas, under the same president who had served during the 1980s, Daniel Ortega, mm-hmm. came back to power. It's a long story as to how he managed to pull that trick off. Mm-hmm. But essentially, Daniel Ortega has become president of Nicaragua again. He's been reelected, despite the fact that constitutionally that was not really legal. But nonetheless, he was reelected. He's currently serving, I believe this is the second year of his second six-year term. So, and he has arranged it so that he could be reelected yet again during the next election. So, in mm-hmm. some sense, he's becoming president for life. Mm-hmm. And the opposition side, they're extremely disorganized. They've sort of split into two, three parties. And for that reason, it's not likely they're going to be much of a challenge to the current Sandinista government. I think it does need to be noted for those who are familiar with the Sandinistas from the 1980s, and you know, of course the Sandinistas and Nicaragua were quite famous during the 1980s due to the Civil War, the Contra War. The Sandinista party today under Daniel Ortega is somewhat of a different animal than it was during the 1980s. It's truly a party under Daniel Ortega and his cohort's control. Many of the people that fought alongside Daniel Ortega during the 1980s have either left or been thrown out of the party simply because they disagreed with Ortega's policies. Mm-hmm. Not everyone. It's certainly not fair to say everyone. But a large number of people became very disillusioned with the Sandinista party. And so, therefore, there's a big difference between the Sandinistas of the 1980s, the Revolutionary Party that was somewhat famous during that era, and the current government, which is really more of a government of Daniel Ortega.
Mm-hmm. Becoming a plutocracy, or what do you call him? As a patriarchy, he seems to be establishing himself as the father figure of the...
He does seem to be doing that. There's widespread speculation that his wife will succeed him as president his children. Again, there's widespread speculation about everything in the world, so that who's to know if that's the truth. But that's what many people believe.
I know when people like me ask questions of people like you, they're very, very general. But give us an impression of social classes. Very, very rich, very, very poor, and a small middle class. That's a guess.
That's a fairly accurate guess. It's not all that different from the United States, just the scale is a bit different. There is a wealthy upper class in Nicaragua, some of whom are very good people. I don't mean to, it wouldn't make it a class distinction in the sense of saying these are evil human beings or anything like that. Some of them are very generous. They've established hospitals, aid organizations, and other things that do a great deal of good work in what is a very poor country. However, by and large, this is, again, still a very poor country with not much of a middle class. There exists a middle class, but I'm not going to say that I'm completely accurate with these statistics, but I would say somewhere between 60 to 70% of the population falls below what is described as the UN poverty line. And I do know that the exact figure is 46% fall below the true UN poverty line, the desperate poverty line of $1.15 a day as their income level. So, almost half of the country lives on less than $1.15 per day.
No easy solutions.
No truly easy solutions. I mean, like many countries in Central America or really in the developing world, the reliance is on agriculture, and that's always going to be hit and miss, especially as in the case of many Nicaraguans, they're not themselves landowners. They work as paid labor, wage labor. So that's intermittent work for one thing. It depends on crop cycles, but also they don't see the full benefit, they don't get all of the money that comes in from what they're working on, what they're selling and growing. So, the country is, for the time being, going to remain a very poor country. There's no one-size-fits-all solution to that. I will say, I may have sounded like I'm critical of the Ortega Sandinista government, but they have made some good strides in some areas of this. For example, they have a program called Zero Hunger that they're critics of it, but they have been giving families access to animals, for example, donating animals, which are then, you can... breed the animals in or pigs, cows, things such as that, so that, families have access to protein, essentially. Education under the Sandinista government in the last 5 to 6 years has improved, not as much as you might like. Certainly it's not perfect, but it's far better than it was in the governments prior to the Sandinista. So there, like every government, there's good and bad sides. But the current Sandinista government under Daniel Ortega has made some pretty good investments in what maybe you might consider the long-term future of the country and things like education and doing what they can to alleviate outright hunger. As poor as Nicaragua is, there's relatively little starvation. So and that has to be noted in favor of the way the country is run.
Poverty and environment. The soil quality in certain parts of the country probably not so good, and excess population pushing out to these areas and denuding. Is it troubled in its environment, like Haiti, for example?
It is, depending upon the zone you're speaking of, but yes, that's becoming more of an issue. Deforestation especially is becoming an issue. On the Atlantic coast, which is far less populated than the Pacific side of Nicaragua, there's a great deal of deforestation taking place, mainly for cattle grazing. Mm-hmm. Of course, there's income that comes in from cutting down the trees and selling them for lumber as well. But really, the deforestation is taking place more for large-scale cattle cooperatives or cattle businesses that are setting up ranches out in those regions. And, you know, to a lesser extent perhaps on the Pacific side, because the Pacific side has better soils, more access to where you can bring in crops. So therefore, you know, people are, you know, they still want to keep the land available for agriculture, though sometimes agriculture means tobacco or other non-foodstuffs. Nonetheless, it's still producing enough income that you wouldn't want to turn that land over to cattle. Mm. Nonetheless, the environment has been heavily degraded in many, many parts of the country, and that's an increasing problem, whether you're talking about the Pacific side or the Atlantic side, especially because of the heavy use of pesticides and chemicals. I worked for a while, and I still do potable water projects, and what you find most often is in many areas the potable water is being completely contaminated due to the use of pesticides and chemicals. There may be water available in the form of streams, wells, but because of the agricultural runoff from things like tobacco farming, that water is contaminated and unusable, which, of course, for the general population creates a little bit of an issue. It doesn't create an issue for the person running the tobacco farm.
No, they're up above the line where it seeps down.
Exactly.
Two points to make with our guest today is Greg Bowles from Nicaragua. The first one is what service we can render to such a country, to such a population, to such a people, and do so without paternalizing. That's always a favorite concern of mine. And on the other hand, what service they do for us. Let's start with the first one, and let's make it personal. What is your role in Nicaragua, Greg?
I'm the current director, in-country director, for Project Gettysburg León, which is a sister city project between the city of Gettysburg and León, Nicaragua. León is the second largest city in the country. And we work not just in the city, but in the rural regions outside. León is both a city and a district. So what type of projects we work on, they vary a bit. For example, we have one project within the city that works with an art school. We do cultural exchanges here with Gettysburg. Currently, at this time, we have an artist in residence who's been here for 3 months now, doing programs to teach the Nicaraguan style of art in public schools here in Adams County, of where Gettysburg is located. But beyond that, we support that school within León. We're supporting cultural exchange between the United States and Nicaragua using the school. We work in other types of projects. For example, we've built health centers. We've built schools in rural areas which otherwise would not have access they would not have the funds available to them to do that. All of that has been done not just as a gift, i.e. it's not we come in here and do something for you and leave it behind. The community has to contribute labor. They have to make sure that, for example, if you're building a health center, it does no good if the community has not set it up so that a doctor or a nurse will be staffing it, and you're not going to be there to staff it yourself. So therefore, you know, in terms of preparing for what the project may be, that's the expectation of the community is, you know, we will help you build something. You will have to contribute your labor, but you'll have to work towards making it sustainable, making it work. One of our other projects at the moment, which again I would really highlight as a project that can help the country in general, is a small-scale agricultural program where we're training two extensionists, Nicaraguans, who are using methods of soil treatment, natural pesticides, irrigation systems, all of these things that they're learning about and then passing on to other farmers in the community where they live, so that instead of, you know, just being the typical type of agriculture that's practiced in Nicaragua, and, you know, it's very subsistence level, basic getting by type of agriculture, growing corn and beans. Families are diversifying into growing other types of products which they can use for their own nutrition, i.e. you could talk about cabbage, tomatoes, cucumbers, onions, as well as fruits. We're helping these extensionists so that they can help their community grow those types of foods and teach them that these are important parts of, mm-hmm. of their diet, that they really need to be doing this sort of thing. And again, that's sustainable. It's not just, mm-hmm. you know, here we are growing one type of thing. It's teaching people that you really need this for your children to develop and grow. And that's a large part of what Project Gettysburg León has done. That's been in conjunction with the Young Growers Alliance of Adams County, a group of extensionists and farmers here in Adams County of Pennsylvania. They've been financially and technically, they've been a great assistance in helping that project move forward. We've got a number of other smaller projects in line, too, but the working with the art school, the agricultural program, and some of these infrastructure projects are, by and large, the ones that Project Gettysburg León is focused on the most.
By the way, if you haven't noticed, as we walked into our studios here, there's a large mural out in the reception area which is done by a Nicaraguan artist who came here some years ago in exchange. It was a wonderful, because he had people, he couldn't speak English, and most of the people couldn't speak Spanish, but he had them help in the development of this large mural. It was a wonderful exchange.
I actually did notice that. It's a very distinctive style, so if you're familiar with it, when you see
you recognize it right away.
Yeah. Exactly.
You're not alone in this. Other organizations from the United States and around the world are there for service as well?
Mm-hmm. Yes, quite a number. As in with many developing countries, there's a large number of organizations, some small scale. I would say Project Gettysburg alone is fairly small scale. It's certainly not the smallest, but there are also some large-scale organizations such as UNDP or United Nations Development Program or Save the Children or organizations such as that, Habitat for Humanity, who mm-hmm. also work in Nicaragua on a larger scale level than what Project Gettysburg Leone does. There are also a lot of small-scale organizations like PGL that work in-country, all of them generally pretty good. Few of them perhaps have a more of a paternalistic method of working or a gift-giving attitude towards what they do within the country. But I would say that's a small percentage of the organizations that work within Nicaragua. Most of them have as their methodology that they want to work together with the people and have the people learn something as they're working together. Well, you learn, it goes both ways. You learn something from Nicaraguans learn something from you. But I would say a lot of the organizations that are doing quote-unquote aid work in Nicaragua now, they base it on an exchange, not just cultural exchange, knowledge exchange. It's not just mm-hmm. a gift-giving mm-hmm. situation.
Cooperatives are set up, for example, in order to get these projects going so that people learn to work with each other and to share. So you've already started to answer the second part of that question. Mm-hmm. How does serving there serve us as well? How does Nicaragua serve us?
Mm-hmm. For one thing, raising the awareness of there is a large world out there, Nicaragua being a prime example of it, that has to live by different standards than what we have in the United States. I mean, I know people that I know here, family that I have here, we're so used to our electronic devices and our interconnectedness to the world and all the bells and whistles of, you name it, coffee shops where coffee is $5 a cup and all of these kinds of things. That's a universe that it's almost like living on another planet when you go to countries like Nicaragua or Haiti or, name your developing country. Part of the cross-cultural exchange, and I've seen this time and time again with students from Gettysburg College or people from elsewhere who come down to Nicaragua, is just realizing not many people in the world get to live like that. Mm-hmm. And in Nicaragua, not many people within Nicaragua get to live anywhere close to like that. They may see it on television, but it's not a part of their universe. It's not a part of their reality. And I think that's an important realization to make, that the world is still a somewhat divided place between those who have and those who don't. It's not necessarily, it doesn't have to be a thing where you accuse people of being evil or anything such as that, but it is something that's important to realize and important to do something about. What people from here also get a lot of times is a sense of the culture of Nicaragua, art being one example. Mm-hmm. The artists that Project Gettysburg Leone have brought here, they show something of what is Nicaragua like from an artistic point of view. And it is a very art-oriented country. Mm-hmm. And, it's often said that everyone in Nicaragua is a poet. Poetry is still a huge influence, a large part of the culture in Nicaragua. I'm not so sure I'd say that about the United States anymore. but painting and mm-hmm. traditional dance, even very young people who you might think would be into more modern culture, rock and pop or what have you, are still interested in the deep roots, the traditional roots of culture in Nicaragua, meaning both painting, traditional dance, traditional music. And that's, I think, something for us to realize that, not all countries have adopted our standards or our music or our wants and needs. Some countries still have a strong pride in what they've done on their own. And beyond that, I think that there's a lot of ways in which we can learn from Nicaraguans about how to relate to families. I mean, the Nicaraguan family is very close-knit. How to relate to people in general. I've often had it said to me that you Americans are always looking at your watch. You're always looking at where you're supposed to be within 10 minutes or 15 minutes from now. Nicaraguans, if you run into a friend on the street, he or she, you stop and talk to them for 5, 10 minutes. If that makes you 10 minutes late for your next appointment or...
Mañana.
Yes. I mean, sometimes that can be a bit frustrating.
That wasn't fair.
But I understand what you mean. If you set up a meeting in Nicaragua for 2 o'clock, you're lucky if it gets started by 3 because people stop and talk to their friends on the street. Yeah. But Nicaraguans also, you know, and I think this is something I've learned, they consider it important to socialize like that, to get to know your friends and your neighbors, to not just rush them off because you're looking at your watch. So, you know, that's something that people have learned, I think, going down to Nicaragua.
As an interviewee, or as an interviewer, rather, I get the chance once in a while to ask some off-the-wall questions. So brief answers to really crazy questions. What makes Costa Rica so relatively successful when Nicaragua and Honduras and others have had much more of a struggle? Are there easy answers to that?
There's not exactly easy answers to that. The economic development in Costa Rica has been quite different, and the history of war and peace in Costa Rica has been quite different. Some Nicaraguans would answer that question by saying, well, you know, there, back in the early 1900s, there was a choice between where the canal was going to go, whether it was going to Panama or Nicaragua. Once the decision was made for Panama, the focus of the United States was to repress any type of canal going through Nicaragua. And so there was a great deal of intervention, including U.S. Marine occupation of Nicaragua during the 1920s and 1930s, not entirely, but in large part, to keep canal from being built as competition with Panama. Of course, that didn't happen in Costa Rica. Costa Rica's geographically has never been a candidate for canal. So, you know, some Nicaraguans will tell you that flat out, that our history would be like Panama's as opposed to like Nicaragua's if the canal had gone through Nicaragua as opposed to going through Panama. And Costa Rica being between the two countries lucked out because it's, you know, far enough north to
the milk made between two great giants.
Exactly.
You know, in fact, now you've already anticipated my second question. I thought you weren't going to be ready for this. Are we ever going to get a canal through Nicaragua?
There is currently, and it's a somewhat controversial issue, there is a Chinese telecommunications investor who has gotten a concession, and this was kind of pushed through the Nicaraguan Senate, but he has gotten a concession to build a canal in Nicaragua at a cost of about $40 billion. Now, where a Chinese telecommunications expert is going to raise $40 billion is, of course, of question. However, the Nicaraguan government approved this project, and supposedly there is going to be an environmental impact study and an economic assessment study being put out within this year. I've even heard that they're going to try to start the project this year. My personal opinion is the project will never happen. I just don't see it as economically feasible. $40 billion is a lot of money for a telecommunications expert to raise for a project such as this. It would also be a complete environmental disaster. And the other aspect of this is, going back to Costa Rica, the most logical route, there could be other routes, but the most logical route for any kind of canal through Nicaragua is going to be along the river that is the border between Costa Rica and Nicaragua. Costa Rica might have a thing or two to say about that.
Our guest is Greg Bowles. We talked about what we need to know about Nicaragua and how we can serve each other for the Seminary Explorers. I'm Jerry Christensen. Have a very good day.
You've been listening to The Seminary Explorers, from historic Seminary Ridge in Gettysburg, Pennsylvania, a production of the Lutheran Theological Seminary at Gettysburg. We invite you to visit our website at www.ltsg.edu. All opinions expressed on this program are those of the individual speakers and are not necessarily those of Gettysburg Seminary or the Evangelical Lutheran Church in America.